supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, sometimes it takes pepper plants a long time to produce their fruits and ripen them up. Whether they're hot peppers or sweet bell peppers, it can take a while. What do you do if frost is approaching, the days are getting shorter, and your peppers aren't ready yet? We'll tell you how to bring them inside as houseplants, house pets maybe, and how to make the delicious monster mash from your hotties. It's a lot to get done. We better get right to your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Ronald, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, Ron. Where are you, sir?
I'm in Southampton, Pennsylvania.
Just outside of Philadelphia.
Yes.
All right. What can we do for Ron in Southampton, PA?
Well, I have an area of my yard that keeps dying. I had a maple tree in that area. 5 years ago, it was taken down. Hmm. I tried to plant grass, and it died. And I dug up some roots, and this past spring, I planted grass, and it was growing great, and then all of a sudden, it just died.
Oh, okay, sure.
50% of it.
Yeah, that's a false trail, Ron. It can be difficult to grow grass in an area where a tree was taken down if the stump wasn't pulled. But what's going to happen is you're going to get a lot of mushrooms coming up in that area over the years as the underground root parts slowly decay. It'll be the mushrooms above ground that'll show you that the mycelium is transforming the wood underground into just more soil. Your mistake was sowing grass seed in the spring in the Mid-Atlantic region. I presume it was the seed of a cool season grass, like bluegrass, fescue, or a mixture?
Tall fescue and then some rye.
Yeah.
Perennial rye.
See, even though everybody sells grass seed in the spring, it really is the worst time to try to plant grass seed in the Mid-Atlantic area. If you think about it, it makes common sense. Grass seed needs a pretty high temperature to germinate. And the soils are still freezing cold in the spring. Even when the air temperature is pretty warm, that soil is still holding on to the cold of winter. Plus, when finally the grass does germinate, all of a sudden it gets blindingly hot. And this new young grass, which is a cool season grass, that's what people don't understand. The grasses you named, you know, fescue and rye, they come from cool parts of Europe. You know, places like England and Ireland and Scotland, and they really are not bred to ever take a really hot summer well, but the baby grass can't take it at all. The time to sow a cool season lawn, even though it seems counterintuitive, is mid-August through the end of September. So you still have time to get out there and try it again, if that's a good idea for you.
Yeah, I started digging it up the area.
Okay. So make sure the soil is well broken up. This would be a great time to have a load of compost delivered. There's a lot of compost that got finished over the summer that's ready to be delivered now. If you had a truckload of that spread on top of what you got, you'd have a great surface. Now, one of the keys to having a good-looking lawn is no matter what you do to prepare the soil, the area has to be level. Level it out as much as humanly possible, and then spread the seed, and then just rake the seed into the subsoil. Don't go nuts. As long as the seed is just slightly covered by some soil, you want the roots to go down as much as you want the plants to go up. So don't worry if it seems the seed is a little high in the soil. The root growth should take care of that. Don't put any kind of straw or other nonsense on top. And if we don't get rain, just water it for like a half an hour every morning. At this time of year, the seed should germinate in like 5 days, then back off and start watering normally, which is one or two deep soakings a week, not every day. And by the time this new grass that's come up in warm soil has to endure its first hot summer, it's almost going to be a year old. So as long as you've cut it no lower than 3 inches during that time, it should get through next summer brilliantly.
Okay, thank you.
All right, good luck, sir.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Taylor, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello, Taylor.
Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it. Where are you, Taylor?
Philadelphia.
You got to give us a neighborhood.
All right, South Philadelphia, Queen Village.
Okay, very good. What can we do for Taylor in Queen Village?
Okay, I have two apple trees in my yard that I planted 20 years ago. And they have both gotten codling moths, as far as I know. So they have like moths that fly around in the spring, and then each apple gets kind of eaten up by, you know, there's like several wormy type things. And I was kind of okay with not getting apples that I could eat off the tree, but now the trees are really looking diseased. So right now in August, a lot of leaves are falling off. So the trees are starting to look like they're not healthy, and I'm thinking I might need to get just take them out and start with other trees. But
okay, so do you have short-term memory loss, Taylor?
No.
You do realize from your previous 20 years that apple trees are not the prettiest trees in the fall.
No, but yes.
All okay. Apple trees look pretty ratty right now.
Okay.
You know, they produce useful fruits, and they put on that tremendous apple blossom show for about 10 days in the spring.
Uh-huh.
But other than that, they are the reverse of four-season trees. Now, do you prune them every year?
I've been pruning them every couple of years. I did a really heavy prune a couple of years ago, and I was going to prune this year, but I was going to wait until it cools off a little bit.
Oh, yeah. You haven't been pruning them in the fall, have you?
Well, one of the things that I was told by a tree service a few years ago is to prune in the summer because it doesn't spur growth in the same way that pruning in the winter does.
Right, pruning does cause new growth. And certainly trees don't want to regrow in the heat and wet of the summer. What are they thinking? They want to get hired to replace the trees after they give you bad advice. No.
Okay.
With apple trees, the classic time to prune is either the dead of winter or first thing in the spring when the tree begins to leaf out. And what you want to do is you want to remove older branches. You want to remove branches that are sticking straight up.
Right.
If two branches are crossing, you want to get one out of there, and then you want to look towards the center of the tree and open it up so there's good airflow. With apple trees, there's no reason not to prune the full one-third of the tree. This does theoretically reduce the number of apples, but
that's fine, but
dramatically increases the quality of the apples.
Okay.
So then when the apples appear, you also then want to thin them. After flowering, when you get baby apples, you want to remove about half of them. That way the tree has the energy it needs to ripen up all the apples that are remaining to a good size and flavor. Do you feed the tree or mulch it or anything?
I put some compost, and I do have tree food that I can put out.
What's the tree food?
I'm not sure. I have to look and see.
Yeah, just keep putting fresh compost at the base of the tree. No actual food. Apple trees are light feeders, and they produce good fruit. Now, you got two choices. If you do have codling moth, you can go to any good independent garden center, and you can buy what look like fake apples that you then paint with a sticky substance. And when the moths come flying in, they land on the fake apples, and they get trapped. This is also a good way to know when the creatures are in the air. But there's also a very similar creature called the oriental fruit moth that's known for this. So if you don't mind the look, there's a one-step product that prevents both these creatures and a number of diseases, and that is a clay spray, C-L-A-Y.
Okay.
The best-known brand name is Surround. And all it is a highly refined kaolin clay. And you mix it with water. You spray it on the tree. The trees look a little Christmas-like. They do get silvery gray flocked.
Right.
But it makes an absolute barrier against pests and disease while not interfering with photosynthesis. It's a remarkable product. And then you really won't have the wormy apples anymore.
When would I spray?
Right after you're done thinning the baby apples.
Okay, that sounds great, because I've tried like the socks that you can put on apples. Really didn't help.
Actually, if you were a professional trying to raise like gift quality apples, like they put in the boxes mm-hmm. with the gift wrap, you would actually staple paper bags, lunch bags, brown lunch bags over each developing apple.
Right, yeah. It's a lot of work climbing around the tree doing that.
Exactly. You got to get a high return for that to be worthwhile. Right, right. I would go with the clay spray.
Sounds great. Okay.
All right.
I'll call you in the spring and let you know how my apples are.
Very good. And I got good news for you. 20 years is not old for an apple tree. They still have a lot of productive years ahead of them. Peach trees are very short-lived, but apple trees can be very long-lived.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Good luck, Taylor.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will appear at the Ludington Library in Lower Merion at 7 p.m. on Wednesday evening, October 4th, and at the Lower Makefield Township Building at 10 a.m. on Saturday, October 28th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with hot pepper tips and tricks and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating their 141st year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, seed starting, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, your peppers don't have to die from the frost, especially if they haven't ripened up yet or you haven't gotten enough fruits. It's relatively easy to bring them inside, keep them under lights, and extend their season by at least a couple of months, maybe till next year. So you do that and you'll have more hot peppers to use with the recipes that we're going to dish out at the end of that question of the week. But now it's time for more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Beth, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Beth. How are you?
Very good.
And where is Beth very good?
I am in Plattsburgh, New York. About an hour from Montreal.
All right. What can we do for Beth in upstate New York?
Well, we moved into this home about 5 years ago, and the people who lived here before us did nothing with the outside anything. we put in new landscaping in the front, but in the back, we were trying to do stuff ourselves. And we had a burning bush that was the size of a tree. It was huge. And I cut it down last year, like a little more than half I cut off. And I didn't know if that was a mistake. And as the summer goes on, the leaves are all like curling. And on closer inspection, which I didn't do right away, I realize it looks like tent caterpillars.
Okay.
So I treat that.
With what?
But, oh, I knew you were going to ask that. I don't know. I went to the store and I looked for something that said treats tent caterpillars. It was a spray.
Okay. I hope you wore gloves and protection if it wasn't BT.
Well, no.
Okay. Yeah. Generally, an insecticide is not the first thing you look for when you have an insect problem. But go ahead.
So now it looks like it does have some new growth parts of it. But the rest of it still looks shriveled and stuff. But it seems like the tent caterpillars are gone. And there was also those Japanese
beetles.
Well, yeah.
Okay, so
they were all over it.
Okay, so what time of year did you try to kill the plant by cutting it back by half?
I believe it was early summer.
Okay, that's not a bad time. In the future, and this applies to everybody out there, when you suddenly notice after 5 or 10 or 20 years that a plant is too big, you can't fix that in one season. What you do is take off like 25% of the plant either over the winter or in the spring, and then do that every year for a couple of years, and you wind up with a much better looking plant, especially if parts of it don't get dead because you cut away too much of it.
Yeah.
Now, if you had tent caterpillars, they would have appeared in the spring. If you had caterpillars that showed up late this season, they would be fall webworms. Same kind of pest. It's a caterpillar that builds a big communal nest and lives inside. Even though it seems too simple, you don't need these non-essential products. You don't need any kind of poisons to control this. If you have tent caterpillars or you have fall webworms, all you got to do is get a broom or a hoe and bust up the nest. And then birds will come in and take care of the rest. Whereby if you spray, any birds who come in and feed on the caterpillars could then be poisoned.
Okay.
So you just create a vicious circle. Now, it's unusual for these plants to be attacked, although you did weaken them severely by cutting off too much of them.
Right.
Did you water them well afterwards?
Well, you know, now that I've done some research and realized the mistakes that I made when I cut other things, I did it much more like you're explaining and have watered and fertilized.
Now, what did you fertilize with?
I believe it was like Miracle-Gro.
Okay, so Miracle-Gro and other chemical fertilizers are concentrated salts. They can be really bad for plants. Essentially, what's in that box and a lot of chemical fertilizers are simply high explosives that have been repackaged. It's the same ingredients that were used to blow up the Oklahoma Federal Building back in the 90s.
Okay.
These are totally unnatural, and when you feed plants, it's like giving an athlete steroids. It may make them seem to perform well for a short period of time, but then they break down. And chemical fertilizers are one of the biggest causes of insect attack. When you cause this lush new growth that's unnatural, insects are attracted to it. If you hadn't used the Miracle-Gro or a chemical fertilizer, I suggest that you wouldn't have had at least one of the infestations that you suffered. So going forward, stop with this chemical nonsense. You're going to kill your plants and you're going to hurt yourself. Find a source of good quality compost and just spread some compost under your plants. No more chemical salts, especially if you've been using them for years. They're building up in the soil. And in your region where you have a short growing area, you always want to be using less fertilizer than somebody down south because your plants don't have a long enough season to utilize those nutrients. So you're a perfect candidate for just a mulch of compost. Leave the poor thing alone. Other than that, spread the compost around its base, ideally this month, and then just leave it alone. And once those salts wash out of the soil and after a season of recovering from the pruning, you should see what part of the plants are still good, and hopefully all of them are. Wait till like late spring before you decide a portion of the plant is dead. And then if you do see some brown areas when the rest is all greened up, just gently prune those out and work around them.
Okay.
All right?
All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Good luck now.
Okay. Thank you.
1-888-346-9499. Travis, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks, Mike. How are you?
I am just ducky today, Travis. Thank you for asking. How are you, sir?
I am excellent.
And where is Travis excellent?
Travis Excellent is sitting in his office in State College, Pennsylvania, on the Penn State campus, and my actual home is just outside of town in a little burg called Bellefonte, Pennsylvania.
I was in State College this spring. We had a great time. I did a performance at the State Theater, that classic old theater in downtown. I did a presentation for the public radio station there at the college. And when I was leaving, I drove back and forth. I think I stopped in, what's the name of the town again?
It's called Bellefonte. It's Victorian Bellefonte. There are a lot of old Victorian houses there.
Yes, yes. And crazy streets, like, make Seattle look flat.
Yes, they're very, very street. There's one street that's called High Street, simply because you get really high on it. I mean,
from lack of breath. And I'm going to throw in a plug. I had lunch at this wonderful restaurant called Blonde that I wasn't even sure it was a lunch place. It was filled with all these antiques and artworks and crazy stuff, and a great lunch and a fun place. And normally I want to bolt. I want to get home. I spent a good hour walking around your town. I was very impressed.
Excellent.
All right. What can we do for you in that town?
Well, I tell you, I have, I don't know the difference between a paper bark and a river bark. They kind of look like aspens.
Okay.
And I have six of them.
Mm-hmm.
I have three in the front yard and three on the side of my house. I did not plant these. These were planted when I bought the house. And the two on the outsides, and they're not close together, they're probably a good 6 feet apart from each other. But the two on the outsides always maintain their green leaves throughout the summer. And the one tree that's on the inside of those three trees always turns yellow and drops its leaves early. So it's already started dropping its leaves, started at the beginning of August.
Okay.
Turn yellow and drop its leaves. The outside trees are normal. They look just normal. So
okay.
I can't figure out what's causing the inside trees to do this.
I think I can. Now, all of the trees, are they planted high enough in the ground that you can see the root flare? They're all planted the same?
They're all planted the same, and they do tend to have raised roots that get air and oxygen, I suppose.
Yes, exactly. Very healthy for a tree. No mulch piled up against them?
No.
Okay. Is there mulch in the area?
There is. There is. It's lightly mulched around them.
Okay. Keep the mulch far away from the trees. And what is it? Is it this god-awful dyed mulch?
Yeah, it's kind of like that pine bark mulch that you get at the store.
Okay. If you insist on using wood mulch, try to get arborist mulch. You know, the tree trimmers leave behind, the real stuff where you're not getting shipped up pallets from China.
Okay.
And is the lawn near them treated?
When you say treated, is it fertilized?
Fertilized or herbicided? Did.
Well, it's fertilized in the spring, and that's about it.
And is it weed and feed, or is it just fertilizer?
It's just a Scotts weed and feed, yeah.
Okay, so stop with the Scotts. You know, get off the 4-step program, get on a 12-step program. I'm sure in a hip community like yours, you can get a nice, natural, organic lawn fertilizer. And just use that. No weed and feed. You know, herbicides are non-selective, so there's something about the lay of the land that could be delivering a larger dose of the herbicide to the middle tree. Other than that, it sounds like a real good case for competition for water and perhaps even nutrients. The trees on the outside are going to get the first crack at rainwater or irrigation water. The trees on the inside, they've got bullies on both sides stealing their lunch money, their water, and their food. So I would get the absolute wood mulch out of there completely the more I think about it. I would mulch around that area with 2 inches of yard waste compost, really concentrating towards those center trees that are struggling a little bit. And when you have times of drought, take a hose out to the area. Just set it to drip gently, just like an annoying drip in a sink in your house, and let it drip at the base of those center trees for like 24 hours. really saturate that soil where no water is getting through because the outside trees are taking it all up, I think you'll end the problem instantly.
Huh. Okay. I was curious if it was just overall enough water, but the two outside trees seem to be doing fine.
Exactly. So they get the first shot at the water. The little guy in the middle, there's nothing left. So when you supplemental water, which you should any week that we don't get an inch of rain, especially if it's a hot summer, just let a hose drip at the base where it's going to feed those two trees literally for 24 hours. So it's
okay,
slow saturation. The roots can take up what they need. I think you'll lose your leaf drop.
Excellent. Well, that is what I will do then. And I will pull the mulch away from those center trees so that they don't have any.
Good. Yes. And say hi to the girls at Blonde for me.
I will do so. They'll be happy to hear that.
All right. Take care, man.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Julia, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to get to talk to you.
I'm so excited to talk to you. Julia, where are you?
I'm in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma.
Oh, what a wonderful place. I love our listeners out there. The last visit, you guys almost killed me with kindness. I barely crawled out alive.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
That was great.
Good.
Yeah, and you guys love your public radio down there. I know that.
Absolutely, I do. I was going to say I'm an avid listener, but I'm absolutely not an avid gardener, which is why I'm calling.
Good. That's why I don't have to work for a living. All right. What can we do for Julia in OKC?
So my husband and I just recently bought a home, and when we were looking at houses, we came to the home that we're now in, and this is just a backstory, but we came and saw the home, and we thought it was beautiful, and then we walked into the backyard, and my husband immediately said, absolutely not. This house is out of the question. We're not taking it. And I said, why? And he said, because there is a bamboo forest back here that's going to be a nightmare to get rid of. But long story short, our love for the house won over the hatred of the bamboo, I guess. So now we've inherited this issue with bamboo, which I've since learned there are two kinds of bamboo. One is called running bamboo, I guess, and cluster bamboo.
Yes, that's true.
So we have, you know, since through the grapevine also learned that our neighbors on one side have actually had to replace the fence because I think before we got in the house, it destroyed their fence. It's all alongside on one side, and then it's actually jumped to the front. And I've recently noticed that there's one stalk that is on the opposite side that started growing behind the fence.
Wait till it comes up in the middle of your living room while you're watching Jeopardy one night.
Oh, that's what I'm afraid of.
So, I mean, it's going to be a huge construction job. Now, what do you want out there where the bamboo is? Or do you like the idea of the forest and you just want to stop its forward advance?
I think my husband's plan is to actually obliterate the bamboo altogether.
Yeah,
now, I think it looks nice.
Yeah,
I think it looks nice and it does provide quite a bit of
It's a stunningly beautiful plant. It has four-season interest.
Well,
I know you guys don't get a lot of snow, but when there's snow on what's called running bamboo or arrow bamboo, and it gently leans over, and then the snow, it's the kind of thing that made the fine art Japanese painters weep for centuries, the beauty of it.
I can't wait to see that. I hope we get to see that.
Here's the deal. You can spray this thing with all you want, with all the nasty herbicides in all the world, and it's not going to do a thing, because what you're looking at is actually one giant plant. Think of a tree laying sideways underground, and every culm, C-U-L-M, that's what the individual rods coming up out of the ground are called, they're all coming off one root system. So it has massive energy reserves
right.
We can't even begin to dream of. So what you need to do is you'll need to do a renovation of the entire area. You'll need to have somebody come out with a backhoe, dig it all up, get as much of it out as you can, try to find a good home for it. Otherwise, it can safely be piled up somewhere. It's not going to re-root, but it's going to take forever to break down. And you don't want to throw it into any wild areas where it might take root. So, you know, try to find a good home for it. People will make garden trellises and things out of it. You know, don't leave
That's
out crafters
sure.
and people who do primitive furniture and stuff. This is a great material. And then if you want, if there's a nice cluster that's away from the house that's not causing any problems, you can hire a landscaper to come out and surround it with what's called rhizome barrier. This is like a deep edging. This is like Godzilla edging that goes deep into the ground and will prevent the rhizomes from leaving the enclosed area. You can find a lot of information. You can probably even find the names and contact information of people who are skilled at doing this at a website called American Bamboo.
Okay.
They have all sorts of resources for this. But left unchecked, it will tear up driveways, it'll uproot sheds,
yes.
It can possibly do structural damage to homes. So you want to get on it as soon as you can.
Okay.
And you know, you have added to the history of You Bet Your Garden. I think this is the third time in 19 years that the husband's been right.
That's awesome. I can't wait to tell him. Thank you so much. I appreciate you incredibly much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will deliver the keynote address at the Phipps Conservatory and Botanic Garden in Pittsburgh during their annual Native Plant and Sustainability Conference on Saturday, October 14th. And I will host the Empty Bowl Dinner to benefit homeless families on Wednesday evening, November 15th, at the Lutheran Theological Seminary in the Germantown section of Philadelphia. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with hot pepper tips and tricks and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Tricky Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating their 141st year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, seed starting, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I am your host, Mike McGrath, and we are in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to a double-barreled question of the week. Many people would like to extend their pepper harvest. A lot of bell peppers haven't turned color yet. A lot of hot peppers are still small. Well, they are the easiest plants to bring inside and continue growing to make small peppers big. And we'll also tell you if those peppers are hot, exactly how to make my super secret monster mash instead of just your regular old hot sauce from your harvest. But first, a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Amina, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
How are you doing? Where are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. I live in Mount Juliet, Tennessee.
Oh, okay. What's that like? Whereabouts in Tennessee?
It is east of Nashville.
What can we do for you?
Well, I had a question about there either some sort of gnat or it could possibly also be mosquitoes, but I haven't noticed them biting or anything. But typically early in the morning, we have two large bushes in front of our front porch area, and there are swarms of these things, and just the slightest brush against these bushes, and they all come out, and they're always around the front door area. So I was wondering if, you know, you might be able to tell me what they are and possibly how to prevent them from coming back or at least deter them to a certain degree.
Do these bushes flower?
No.
Are you sure? Because some flowers are what we call insignificant. They're really hard to see. Does the plant form any kind of fruits or berries that persist over the winter?
No, they're just plain old bushes from what I know.
A couple of things could be happening. It could be a moist area of your home where gnats like to hang out. But those gnats would annoy you. They would fly up onto you. They would, like, gaggle around your face to get moisture from you, maybe even take little bites from you. But if nothing's biting you and they're really hanging out on the plant, living on the plant until you rustle up the leaves, I'm thinking there's some sort of native bee or beneficial insect that might be eating aphids or some other pest on the plant that you haven't noticed. Are you just curious about them, or are they coming into the house? Are they being a real problem?
Well, I was also curious about them, but yeah, they're getting into the house. And of course, I mean, you know, we have to sweep around the front door almost every day because they, you know, end up dying right there. And there's hordes of them, and they stick to the siding of the house and stuff because, of course, there's webs and things, but it does just get a little obnoxious. It's mainly in the mornings that they get really bad.
Okay. So there's tiny webs on the plants?
Yeah, there's some webs on the plants. And then, of course, around the front porch area that they'll end up getting stuck in.
Okay. So they're getting stuck in spider webs?
Yes.
But there are webs in the plants?
Yes.
Okay. So two things could be happening there. Spiders could be preying on these creatures because it sounds like even though they're small, there's a lot of them.
Right.
Or they could be spider mites, which are which are tiny little creatures that build kind of rough webs that aren't all that noticeable sometimes. But if there's webs in the plants, you can pretty much, and you see tiny little, very tiny little insects, actually they're arachnids, moving around. That would be spider mites. Is this an area that stays really damp?
Yeah, typically it does.
Okay. The basic answer is anything you can do to dry that area out will be helpful. Don't irrigate that area. This coming winter, since you don't know what your shrubs are and stuff, cut them back with an eye towards increasing the airflow around the plant. Do you have, like, any kind of mulch underneath the plant?
No, and we were planning on trimming them back soon. So,
not soon. You don't want to trim anything at this time of year because pruning stimulates new growth while the plant is alive and growing. And if you stimulate new growth too soon before a freeze, that new growth will freeze and the plant could be killed. The best time to prune a plant, if you don't know what kind of plant it is in the middle of winter when it's dormant and no harm can be done. And don't prune away more than a third of the plant, but do look to open up the plant to let more air and sunlight through. The more open those plants are, the less these creatures are going to be around. And the same thing, reroute gutters, don't use irrigation in that area. Keep that area dry. If they are spider mites, it's amazing. Just getting rid of the moisture gets rid of the mites, almost guaranteed.
Okay, perfect. Well, that is all the information I needed for sure.
Well, we hope so. We'll find out, won't we? Yeah.
Yes, most definitely.
All right, good luck.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Kate, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Well, I appreciate you taking my inquiry.
Well, thank you for making your inquiry, Kate. Where are you?
I'm in Elkhart, Indiana, which is just about 20 miles east of the University of Notre Dame. So we're right on the Indiana-Michigan state line.
All right. What can we do for you, Kate?
Well, several years ago, I bought what I thought to be a single-season plant. I bought a crepe myrtle. It was gorgeous. It would look beautiful next to a bright blue birdbath that I have. And I assumed one season it would croak, and it was okay. But we are just out far enough in the country that we still have an old-fashioned septic system. And I happened to plant it, evidently close enough to that said septic system, that winter came, it went, and poof, I have growth on my crepe myrtle.
So I'll explain to listeners who don't understand why you thought the plant would die. Crepe myrtles were, and I use the term were very specifically here, the ultimate southern flowering shrub or tree. They flower very late in the season. And there was a time when you just would not see a crepe myrtle really north of Washington, D.C. But as the winters have gotten warmer, they have crept up. They're very common in the Philadelphia area now. And I'm not surprised that if its roots are in the warm water of a septic field, that it survives that far north.
You know, I guess lucky me by happenstance at that rate.
You know, you're not the only person who lives in the country. I was a city boy who bought a country house. And one of my neighbors, one of my first visitors, goes, "Oh, this is nice. Where's your septic field?" And I go, "Septic what?" And they go, and they explain the system to me. And I go, "I don't know. How will I find it when it's time to get it pumped out?" They said, "Just watch for where the snow melts first in the winter
time.
Where
the snow melts and where the bulbs sprout a little earlier than regular."
Yeah. So do you have a problem or are you just bragging?
Well, like I said, the bigger thing is, how do I prune this thing based on my zone 5? Because obviously the root ball is going to be protected in the wintertime.
Right.
But, you know, I wrap my rhododendrons. Should I be wrapping the crepe myrtle to protect it? And is there a trick to trimming this baby back so I keep a conformation that looks nice but without doing it any major harm?
Well, first of all, your timing is perfect. Prune nothing in the fall, because any plant we prune now, it's still warm enough to stimulate new growth, but that growth will soon freeze. And that's very damaging to plants. This is the time of year to hide the pruners, especially from helpful spouses. And I don't even know if you need to be wrapping your rhododendron. They're pretty frost hardy. But if you want to, that's fine. No reason to wrap a crepe myrtle. It'll be fine. Now, is this a shrub form with a lot of branches coming up, or is it a tree form?
No, it's a shrub form.
Okay, about how tall is it now?
It's probably 3.5, maybe pushing 4 feet.
Oh, that's great. Okay, so what we do is we leave it alone in the fall, and then in the winter, we leave it alone. And then in the spring, we wait till we see the first flush of new growth, and then we check the calendar to see if we are out of the range of any hard frosts. And when those two things come together, when it's growing again and all danger of frost is gone, you go out there and you give it just a little haircut. A plant that size, you should be pruning off 6 inches to a foot of each branch. Just a tiny little haircut. That'll keep it at the same height and will improve the flowering dramatically. These plants do like a pruning, but they don't like what's called crepe murder, where some people will cut them back to the ground. Just because the plant survives this doesn't mean it likes it. So the ideal is in the spring, after new growth, you remove as much of each branch as it grew the previous year. You literally keep it the same size. And you should always prune it in the spring. It really enjoys a haircut.
Cool, because it's absolutely gorgeous. It's just now getting past flush of the of bloom.
They are one of the latest plants to flower. They're magnificent because there's not a lot else in flower at this time of year. So enjoy it, and then leave your hands off of it until the spring.
Thank you very much, Mike. I really appreciate the information.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, as promised, it is time for the question of the week, which is kind of double-barreled, because we're going to tell you how to extend your hot pepper season and make my famous monster mash. Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, please get us started with this week's question.
Reggie, a longtime listener and WHYY member.
Yo, Reggie! Yo, thank you for that show of support, man!
Reggie, in the Germantown section of Philadelphia, writes, I grow a variety of hot peppers and use them to bottle my famous hot sauce. I amend their soil every winter with eggshells and coffee grounds, and in the spring, a little organic fertilizer to get things started. I normally have enough peppers to make my sauce, but I'm getting very little fruit this season. A neighbor is having the same problem, and my local nursery said it's probably due to the unusual amount of rain in the Philadelphia area. Have you heard of any similar complaints this season?
You know, actually, no. We have not had a lot of similar complaints this season. And I am personally looking at a record harvest of peppers, both hot and sweet. Now, I do agree that much of the Mid-Atlantic region and many other places around the country were just drenched this summer, which is unusual. July and August are typically hot and dry. But at least in my garden, all that rain just meant my not having to water or worry when I was away for extended periods of time.
Yeah, like when you took all those weeks off to do things like crash in Asbury Park so you could swim and play pinball, camp out at the Philadelphia Folk Festival.
Guilty, guilty, guilty. I used my vacation time to actually vacation.
The Folk Festival's vacation? Living in a tent in a giant campground where you have to haul your own water and have no electricity doesn't sound like much of a vacation to me.
Ah, but that's because you don't know what it's like to stay up late and then fall asleep in your tent in the cool nighttime air to the sounds of talented people playing guitar and singing softly off in the distance. I miss it already. All right, let's get back and talk about Reggie's peppers.
What's the point? It's too late in the season for him to do anything.
It is not. This is the perfect time of year to get ready to bring those plants indoors.
Oh, that's right. Peppers are perennial plants if you protect them from frost.
And bringing them inside is a great way to extend the harvest, especially if the plants themselves are leafy and healthy. You might wind up making your hot sauce in December instead of September, but you'll still get to make it. So let's deliver the directions on pepper bringing in a nutshell. First, get good-sized plastic pots with good drainage for each plant.
What size pots do you use?
10-inch pots are ideal. That's 10 inches high and 10 inches in diameter across the top. That's big enough for good root growth, but it's small enough to be able to fit four of them under a 4-foot-long fluorescent shop light without any overcrowding.
So dig up each plant you want to overwinter now.
Keeping as much soil as possible around the roots. Then fill in the bottom and the sides of each pot with a 50-50 mix of compost and a really high-quality potting soil. Water it well, and then let the newly planted pots just rest outside for a few days.
Then attack the annoying aphids hiding on those plants.
Yes, indeedy. You got to use a strong spray of water to blast every leaf and branch because they're hiding in there. Repeat this every day for several days and then bring the cleaned up plants inside and position them under a 4-foot-long shop light so that the tops of the plants are almost touching the fluorescent tubes. Better to have the top leaves actually touching those cool-to-the-touch tubes than for them to be multiple inches away where there isn't nearly enough light. Give the plant 16 hours of light and 8 hours of dark every day.
Any flowers on the plants will become peppers, any baby peppers will get bigger, and any big peppers will ripen up. Then what?
Then I suggest using your extended harvest to make both that hot sauce and my monster mash. Whiz the peppers up in a blender with a high-quality vinegar, like apple cider or red wine vinegar. About a half gallon or so of vinegar for every 50 to 60 medium-sized peppers. Pour the results into a big pot. Heat it all up until it just starts to go from a simmer to a low boil. Then strain just the liquid into bottles that have been through a hot water wash, preferably in a dishwasher.
That hot sauce will stay safe to use because of the high acid content of the vinegar.
Then jar up the solid mass that's left over into equally clean jars. That's your monster mash. When I was the editor-in-chief of Organic Gardening magazine, the president of our division would stop by my office every day in the fall asking, "Is the mash ready yet?" It's the best thing to add to soups, stews, and mix into stir-fry, anything you'd use hot sauce for.
And to avoid repeats of Reggie's slow pepper season?
You gotta grow in raised beds, not flat earth. If you're a flat earth gardener, that rain is gonna kill you. And mix those high nitrogen coffee grounds with shredded fall leaves instead of putting them in the garden to make great compost for the spring. Don't use coffee grounds alone. Over time, they're going to make the soil too acidic and nitrogen rich, which is going to slow things down and inhibit flowering. Well, that sure was some hot information about peppers now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over with lots more info about overwintering your peppers and hot sauce and monster mash making, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to bring me to a simmer with vinegar if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email. You're tired, you're poor, you're wretched refuse, teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please include your location, especially if you are certain that we don't need it. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where nobody cares about your location. Ah, but where you will find the answers to all those garden questions you were going to ask us. Audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Get well soon wishes from the entire YBYG staff to Elizabeth Perez Luna, executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Larissa Sapko and Rich Banowitz keep our website hot. Saucy Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Our overwintering editor is Al Banks. Our production assistant, Brett the Viking Raider, does the mash. He does the monster mash. I'm ghoulish Mike McGrath, and I'll be working in my lab late one night until my eyes behold the eerie sight, when suddenly, to my surprise, it's the mash! It's my monster mash! And then Igor and I will see you again next week. Hey, whatever happened to the Transylvania twist?
It was a graveyard smash.
What happens when caterpillars defoliate the same tree year after year? You get to go fishing! I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll discuss the strange symbiosis of a sphinx moth and the catalpa tree.